Be seated. When I was a young man, our pastor took a trip out to California. And when he came back, he chose one of those verses for his text. It was, "I went down into the Garden of Nuts to see the fruits of the valley." And he talked about what he'd seen in California. Anyways. Matthew chapter 2 is where we are. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men, magi, from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him." It is so sad that oftentimes the people can't see the forest for the trees. And sometimes some of the great men of the past were not appreciated by the very people right around them. Jesus went to Nazareth, his hometown, and they were offended, they were stumbled, they were incensed against him because he was too familiar. How can Joseph's son, the carpenter's son, be doing all this? It's like, does that really matter? Well, we know this. We saw him grow up, so we can't learn anything from him. We knew him as a boy, so we can't give him any credit. And here we find these magi. They were probably men from around, Babylon, the Mesopotamian area, the Fertile Crescent area, Babylon, Nineveh. You've got Shushan, you've got Chaldea, you've got all that area over there. And if you turn to Numbers 24, you have the words of Balaam. Balaam was, no doubt, a true prophet of God, though he was not of Israel. God spoke through him, and he gave some of the most concise prophecies, and they came true very accurately. The problem is, he went bad. He was covetous, and that pulled him down. But in Numbers 24, "And when Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, he went not as other times to seek for enchantments, but he set his face toward the wilderness. And Balaam lifted up his eyes, and he saw Israel abiding in his tents according to their tribes, and the Spirit of God came upon him. And he took up this parable and said, 'Balaam the son of Beor has said, and the man whose eyes are open has said, he has said which heard the words of God, which saw the vision of the Almighty, falling into a trance, but having his eyes open. How goodly are thy tents, O Jacob, and thy tabernacles, O Israel! As the valleys are they spread forth, as gardens by the riverside, as the trees of line aloes, which the Lord has planted, and as cedar trees beside the waters." Sounds a little bit like Song of Solomon, doesn't it? That was a poetic way of describing the beauty of something by other things that we ascribe beauty to. "He shall pour the water out of his buckets, and his seed shall be in many waters, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. God brought him forth out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. He shall eat up the nations, his enemies, and shall break their bones, and pierce them through with his arrows. He couched, he lay down as a lion, and as a great lion, who shall stir him up? Blessed is he that blesseth thee, and cursed is he that curseth thee." And Balak's anger was kindled against Balaam, and he smote his hands together, and Balak said unto Balaam, "I called thee to curse mine enemies, and behold, thou hast altogether blessed them these three times. Therefore now flee thou to thy place. I thought to promote thee unto great honor, but lo, the Lord hath kept thee back from honor." And Balaam said unto Balak, "Spake I not also to thy messengers, which thou sendest unto me, saying, if Balak would give me his full house of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the commandment of the Lord to do either good or bad of mine own mind? But what the Lord saith, that will I speak." You know, it'd be great if a lot of preachers were at least as good as Balaam. "And now behold, I go unto my people. Come therefore, and I will advertise thee what this people shall do unto thy people in the latter days." And he took up this parable and said, "Balaam the son of Beor hath said, and the man whose eyes are open hath said, he hath said which heard the words of God and knew the knowledge of the Most High. which saw the vision of the Almighty falling into a trance, but having his eyes open. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Seth, or the children of men. Okay, now, sages in the East who revered what Moses wrote this. Moses recorded Balaam's prophecy as from the Spirit of God, as from Jehovah, okay? So, sages in the East, the wise men were most likely not Jews, and I'll explain that in a minute. But they were disciples of maybe Daniel. Because if you turn to Daniel 9:24, you'll find that Daniel gave a very clear prophecy, a timeline. And they were, and the Jews should have been paying attention. Many of them were, but many of them were not. In Daniel 9:24, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the Prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. Okay? Now, if in 458 BC Ezra arrived in Jerusalem, Ezra 7, the 483 years of the first 69 weeks brings us to AD 26. AD 26 is what we understand as the year that Jesus was baptized, the anointing of the Most Holy, okay? And began his ministry at the age of about 30. And Luke gives us it's the 15th year of Tiberius. So AD 26 is a very important date. Now, chronology is a very tricky thing. If you read much on chronology and the arguments, there are sometimes different people who said things and they're a little discrepancy. So we're going to either shift the weight to this guy or shift the weight to that guy, which changes it maybe a year, 2 years, this and that. And it's a very challenging thing because sometimes people who they're relying on also contradicted himself and said something different over here. And so, in general, AD 26 seems to be a pretty reliable date. Now, in the 15th year of Tiberius, Tiberius was also 2 years co-regent, which makes AD 26 right. Some people argue against including the 2 years as co-regent and want to make it AD 28. You know, to us, it doesn't matter, all right? We want to know, in my book, Bedrock, I said, the main reason chronology is important is to understand how things related to one another, okay, in a timeline. Not if they were exactly the right date from creation. You know, that's not the big thing. If AD 26 was the day of Jesus' baptism, Clausen's chronology makes this 4,000 years after Adam was formed, a full-grown man. Jesus was the second Adam. Adam was made probably around 30 years old. He was formed a full man. I'm sure you all understand this, but when you're reading skeptics about their long ages and so forth, understand when God created a tree, it had rings. When God created people, they were adults. All right, the chicken came before the egg. And so the earth was created with built-in age. So all their aging techniques go out the window. The rocks that God created, okay, they had built-in age. The mountains, the trees, the plants, if there were river valleys, there had to be built-in erosion, right?
Right.
So thinking that God made a perfectly smooth earth and then it began to change shape is ridiculous. Anyways, back to if Clausen is correct, if Jesus was baptized 4,000 years from creation, What does that mean to us? That means 2026 will mark 6,000 years from creation. And that is significant if it's correct.
Right.
It could be off 10, 20, 30 years. Okay? Chronologies are that way. But it's exciting to think that we're approaching the 6,000 year mark, and some of us may still be alive at the 6,000 year mark, whether it's 26 or beyond. We may live to see that day, and that's a good indication that that would be a time when the Lord would return. Okay? The earth was created in 6 days. The seventh day God rested. Many Christians in the past have believed that, and the Jews, that the earth would last 6,000 years, and the seventh millennium, the 7,000th year, which I guess would be the eighth. But anyways, the 7,000 years would be the 1,000-year reign. So, okay, that's significant for us. These wise men, these magi, if they were from Babylon, they were approximately 400 miles from Jerusalem. There was other areas in Mesopotamia, depending on which route they took, could be from 400 to 700 miles away. They, by reading the prophecies they had, walking in the light they had, were tuned in to the timing. They were waiting for the Messiah, waiting for the consolation of Israel. And when the star appeared, they got up, packed up, and traveled 400 to 700 miles, depending on where they were from, expecting Israel to be all abuzz, expecting Jerusalem to be all excited. The Messiah is here. He's born. The long-awaited seed that's going to bruise the serpent's head. The long-awaited son of David, son of Abraham. He's here. And these wise men pack up and get their belongings together. And they've got this big caravan of who knows how many camels. But it was probably more than just three kings of Orient. Okay. Anyways, these magi travel. And they get there and say, "Where is he?" And everybody's looking at one another, "What are you talking about? Where's who?" "The King of Israel. The Messiah. We saw his star in the east, and we've traveled 500 miles to worship him." And everybody's looking at each other. Duh.
Nope.
Sad, isn't it? But we all are prone to that. To not have proper appreciation to that which is near, that which is, we've heard it, we're going to go hear another sermon. The fact is, you may get some information out of a sermon that could save your soul through a crisis in the future, but you were half asleep, and so you didn't get that little piece of ammo that you needed, and you lost the battle. So the Jews were unprepared as a whole. I think it's interesting that God took Joseph and Mary to Bethlehem, the city of David. Okay, well, not actually, Jerusalem was called the city of David. But Bethlehem was considered the place where David was born and also a city of David. Okay, David's seed was largely there. They had come together to pay a tax. So the first people who had the opportunity of hearing about and knowing about the birth of Messiah was David's seed, because they came there to pay their taxes. They were drawn together from wherever they were at in Israel, drawn together to Bethlehem. And I'm sure Zechariah and Elizabeth knew about this and had been talking about it, for 6 months now. And when Joseph and Mary showed up, there was a big crowd there. So probably, a lot of people weren't tuned in. But this was all the seed of David, and once the news got out, people were beginning to tune in. But in Jerusalem, Herod, the Pharisees, the scribes, they were all asleep. And when Herod the king heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. It's like, whoa, there's something big going on, and we're totally ignorant of it. And Herod, though Herod claimed Judaism, okay, he was not of the seed of Abraham or of David. He was an Edomite. And the birth of the Messiah would directly challenge his dynasty. And so he sets out in his heart and mind to destroy the very Messiah of the religion that he claims to adhere to, which shows that he was nothing but a fake. It's man's agenda versus God's agenda. Why are you in church? Why are you in this religion? Why are you celebrating Christmas? Why are you celebrating the resurrection? You know, Herod was going along with Judaism, and yet secretly, privately, he calls the wise men back in. You know, when did you first see this star? And get some information here, and sends out. You know, he's planning to. Oh, I want to come and worship him too. Right. Yeah, right, Herod. Verse 4. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, and thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Now, remember last week I told you that Micah was a contemporary with Isaiah. And so, Isaiah, when he talks about a virgin shall bear a son, unto us a son is given, a child is born, a son is given, the government should be upon his shoulders. Isaiah 9:6, Isaiah 7:14, I think it was. And Micah was also a contemporary. And so these magi didn't have Micah, which tells us they probably weren't Jews. But they probably had Balaam's prophecy, and maybe they were disciples of Daniel there in Babylon, okay? But they did not have Micah the prophet, which if they had been among a community of Jews, I would think they would have had the scroll of all the prophets. But regardless of the situation, they did not know Micah's prophecy, but the scribes and Pharisees in Jerusalem knew right on where Messiah should be born from Micah's prophecy. And so they did not have Micah's information. The scribes and Pharisees had it readily available. They should have also had Daniel's 70 weeks prophecy. Jesus actually rebukes them during his ministry 30 years later. You hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky and of the earth. And how is it that you do not discern this time? You know from Daniel's prophecy that the Messiah should be walking on the earth right now. What's the problem? Anybody else working miracles? Anybody else giving sight to the blind? No. No, they did not want Jesus to be the Messiah. It's not what they wanted. 2:7. There's a lot of people today. You know why there's so many false Christs? Because they don't want the real one. Mm-hmm. You know why Paul in 2 Corinthians 11 said, if someone come and preaches another Jesus, ye might well bear with him. Why? Because that's probably what you want. Because the guy that's preaching it is what he wants. So, you know, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation, the Bible says. As a minister of the gospel, I dare not represent my preference of Jesus. I dare not present my preference of this gospel kingdom, his church, his bride, and who God is. If I do that, I will receive the greater condemnation, the Bible says. Okay? And so will anybody else who tries to accommodate the Bible to their desired structure. I want Christianity to look like this. Therefore, we're going to make the Bible say that. That is so prevalent today, and it's scary. Okay, then Herod, verse 7, when he had privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search diligently for the young child. And when you found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also. Herod was known for his paranoia. Herod was a butcher, okay? He had spies everywhere looking for seditious activity. Herod would occasionally disguise himself as a commoner and mingle among the people at night, listening for conspiracies. Suspected dissidents were captured and tortured, Anyone who did not swear allegiance to Herod was persecuted and or killed. Okay? Herod had no qualms about killing. He killed 2,000 survivors of five cities that rebelled against him. He had his brother-in-law drowned. He executed his uncle, his wife's grandfather, his wife, his mother-in-law, and three of his sons. He murdered faithful followers, servants, friends, soldiers, pious men, and relatives, often on the flimsy evidence of rumors or coerced confessions under torture. In the last days of his life, this is talking about Herod the Great. Okay, that's in history, that's what he's known as. Herod wasn't so great. But there were a number of Herods. Herod Antipas, Herod Agrippa. And so this is Herod the Great. That the Herod that put Peter in prison and that Christ went before, who wanted to see Christ, who killed the Apostle John. Okay. I think I said something wrong back there. Anyway, the Herod that put John in prison and Christ went, that was the son of this Herod. Okay? But and he was the one that was eaten of worms and died because he gave not God the glory. But his father had a similar death. In the last days of Herod's life, he arranged for all the prominent Jewish leaders of the country to be rounded up, placed in a hippodrome, and executed upon word of his decease. Why? He wanted to ensure there would be mourning throughout the land after his death. He knew that they wouldn't cry for him. He wanted to make sure somebody was crying when he died. So he was going to have all these Jewish leaders executed the moment that he died. Fortunately, those orders were never carried out. He died of a disease that was... doctors have tried to figure out what it was. Something to do with his kidneys, maybe gangrene and whatever. But it was a very terrible, painful death, kind of like his son Herod had. And he tried to commit suicide because he was in such agony and pain, and it stunk so bad no one wanted to come around and take care of him. And so God showed him that he was not a god, he was just a man. Verse 9. When they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. I challenge anyone to try and follow the stars to Brookfield. Mm-hmm. I challenge anyone to try and follow a star to a certain house in Brookfield. Brookfield's 10 miles away. Bethlehem is only 6. This could not have been some constellation in the heavens.
Right.
This had to be a miraculous star. Okay?
Yep.
Have you ever tried to follow the moon? Anywhere? Go ahead. And then follow it back.
Yeah.
Okay? See if you end up in the same spot. When I was a kid, we'd go out to Blue Water Lake in New Mexico. And at night, you see the moon making a bright path across the water. We thought, well, we could row to the other side. As long as we stayed in that light, we could row over there. And then we could row back in that same light and we come right back to where we're at, right? Wrong. Wrong. Try it. You'd be lost for sure. This was a supernatural star. And it showed them, it led them from Jerusalem 6 miles south to a house in Bethlehem. Now, it would have taken these guys probably 2 or 3 weeks on camels, a full month or more on foot to come from Babylon, if they were from Babylon, 400 miles away. So, Mary, after the birth of Jesus, stayed in Bethlehem because she had to go through special rites of purification. She had to be there 40 days, then go to the temple and offer the turtle dove and pigeons and so forth that poor people offered. So they were there over a month in Bethlehem, maybe even a little longer than the 40 days, before they headed back the 100 miles, some, you know, 90 to 100 miles back up to Nazareth. So it's very likely that the Magi showed up. It's definite that they would have showed up after the purification in the temple. Because it seems that once Herod got wind of this, Jesus and the family had to flee right away. Okay? It says here, verse 11. And when they were come into the house, okay, get this. Bethlehem's not a big metropolis. This camel caravan, these magi, showing up in town with their entourage, asking, where is he that is born King of the Jews? We've come to worship him. And when they were coming to the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. I guarantee you, this was all over town. People saw these people coming into town, looking out the windows. You know, one time I dropped a huge cottonwood tree in a cul-de-sac. And everybody was looking out the window. So I guarantee you, if they came riding into town with all their camel and their entourage into Bethlehem, everybody was peeking out the window. The little children were running into the house. Everybody's looking, what's going on here? And these guys come up to this one house, dismount. These weren't poor fellas. They were men of means, and they opened their treasures and presented this family. They get down and worship this little baby. That no doubt got around. They worshiped him and give them gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, probably the same night, saying, arise, get up, and take the young child and his mother, and flee into Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word. For Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. Obviously, they could not go up to the temple now for the purification. Obviously, this little boy and this family, as soon as Herod got wind that he'd been mocked, that he had not been obeyed, that his plan of worshiping the child himself, which he had no intention of doing, once he realized they had slipped out, no doubt he was in a rage. And he sent forth his henchmen to go down there and massacre every child 2 years old and under. Now, a lot of people say, well, that means that Jesus would have been 2 years old. Okay. Do you think the soldiers checked birth records? Do you think they had a paperwork? Okay, so-and-so, so-and-so. These soldiers were sent out to kill every little boy that they thought looked 2 years old and under. That would be a safe way of getting all of them. Okay? These soldiers didn't have a measuring tape. They didn't weigh them. They didn't check their records. They were just going by, okay, there's a child. Right? So Herod, the 2 years, his paranoia probably made it to where everyone 2 years old and under. That'll take care of it. Okay? And so it really has no indication of how old Jesus was at the time. Yeah. It just shows the rage of a paranoid man. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, at this time, Herod actually slew one of his own sons when he sent forth these, because there were people who were raising Herod's sons for him. That's what kings did. Adam Clark has a note, says, this cruelty of Herod seems alluded to in very decisive terms by Macrobius, who flourished toward the conclusion of the 4th century. In his chapter, De Jocis Augusti, whatever, it's a long, long title in a different language, he says, quote, when Augustus heard that among those male infants about 2 years old, which Herod, the king of the Jews, ordered to be slain in Syria, which they considered the whole area of Syria, one of his sons was also murdered. He said, Augustus, the emperor, said this of Herod, it is better to be Herod's hog than his son. The point of this saying consists in this, that Herod, professing Judaism, his religion forbade him killing swine or having anything to do with their flesh. Therefore, his hog would have been safe where his son lost his life. So, Herod, in this rash move, go kill all the little boys 2 years old and under, ended up killing one of his own sons. That's kind of the way God does things, isn't it? It's amazing how God does that. You say, Brother Mark, why does God allow bad things to happen? In Romans 5:12, it says, wherefore, as by one man, sin entered into the world, and death by sin. And so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. God did not create what we have now. He created a garden, a paradise. He put man in the paradise. It was living in the abundance of God's love and exactly what God wanted for His creation. Who ruined that? We did. Okay? We ruined it and were banished from God's presence and allowed to live in the world that we made. And, okay, if I did something to be banished from Missouri as when my children were all small and not adults, they would also be banished with me. Now the whole family would probably have to live somewhere like Michigan. No, we would have to live somewhere else. Not just me, but all those who were banished with me. Okay? And so when Adam was banished from God's presence, so were his children. And so the human race goes on in a world that is marred by sin. In a world that is marred by death. And it's not God's first will. God designed at the very onset of that to develop a plan whereby we could be redeemed and reconciled and saved. But there is a battle raging between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. The seed of Abraham, the seed of David, the Messiah that was going to come and save us, and the devil. When Adam sinned, there was, in some way, the world was forfeited to the devil, his conqueror. Okay? And so when Satan said to Christ, "All these are delivered unto me, and whom I will I give it," there was an element of truth in that, because Satan, being the god of this world, the prince and power of the air, has power over this planet. To a degree, God allows it. God allows it based on the fact that Adam fell and forfeited something to the devil. I don't know all the legalities of it, but the Bible's clear on that. So, even though God can snuff him out at any time and snuff the planet out at any time, Satan is allowed to run rampant at this time and have great power. Read Revelation. Make war with the saints and overcome them. So you say, why does God allow bad things to happen? Because God has allowed us to live out the consequences of our decisions. And that happens in big ways, and that happens in small ways. You have a terrible diet, you'll probably get sick and have a disease. You run yourself ragged, you might get some other... You smoke, you might get cancer. You drink, you probably run off the road and kill yourself or kill somebody else. Okay, there are consequences to decisions. God allows us to have free will and live in a world of free will. Everybody's exercising their free will, and we're suffering the consequences, not only of my free will, but of their free will. And also the fact that when Adam fell, when man fell, creation was marred by the fall. The whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now, waiting for the redemption that we're waiting for. Okay? So, why did God allow that tornado to kill those people? God is allowing this whole thing to run out, to run its course. Bad things happen, good things happen. We can live in a time of peace or in a time of war. We can escape or we can be kidnapped. All kinds of things can happen. And God is not intricately controlling it all. It's not all predestined. Okay? God's not the author of the evil. He's not the author of the crime and the sin. But He's allowing man's choices, the consequences of those choices, to play out so that man can see that he wasn't smarter than God. And we can suffer the penalty of our own trespass. And there will be a time for this. God has made a way for us to be redeemed and saved and brought back into paradise again. But first of all, we've got our faith has to be tested behind enemy lines, which is where we are in life. Anyways, so you say, why did God allow all those little babies to be killed? There were many more babies than that killed in the struggle between Satan and the seed. Remember Athaliah destroying all the seed royal and only Joash was saved? Yeah, there was a lot of blood has been shed for Satan trying to destroy the Messiah. Okay? Before he could even be born. And this is just part of it. And God's people have suffered along the way in this struggle. And it's not God's fault. It's the fact that there is a battle raging, and the battle is for our salvation. So, it says, verse 14. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt. Egypt was the closest place to get away from Herod's jurisdiction. 60 to 80 miles, depending on the route. That was the it was closer than getting back up to Galilee and Nazareth. Fleeing south from Bethlehem, which was south of Jerusalem, fleeing directly south was the quickest way to get out of Herod's jurisdiction. And they departed into Egypt and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. Obviously, that was spoken in Hosea 11:1 about Israel. Everything in the Old Testament was pointing towards the Messiah. So for Matthew to accommodate these verses in the life of Jesus was totally appropriate in the mind of Jewish rabbis and Jewish believers, because it was all from the seed that was going to be Messiah, and Satan trying to destroy that seed, and how God preserved that seed. And most of the time when God intervened in human history, it was the preservation of the seed for him to fulfill his promise. That's why he didn't intervene in a lot of other places where people were killed. People were tortured. People were imprisoned, slaughtered. Why didn't God intervene there? Why did God save John and Jesus? Because I don't know where John was, but he was less than 2 years old here. But he didn't save all the babies. God intervened enough to preserve the Messiah's seed, to preserve the Messiah, so our redemption would be possible. But he never was obligated to come down and right all the wrongs. Never. So, Herod, verse 16, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof. We have no idea how many that was. From 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Okay? As we said before, his paranoia was making sure they didn't miss anybody. He was not doing it technically 2 years. You know, well, this one's a year and a half. This one's a little over. He wasn't concerned about that. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremy the prophet. And what was spoken was Rachel, Jacob's wife, weeping over her children. It says here, in Ramah, was there a voice heard, lamentation and weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and would not be comforted because they are not. And this is not saying that Jeremiah was talking specifically about this event, but just like the other application of Scripture, he was talking about the consequences of this battle, the casualties and fatalities of this long-running battle between Satan and the seed of the woman. And this was another event that was significant. Okay? Ramah was just a short ways north of Bethlehem, and Rachel's sepulcher was around that area. So these were descendants of Rachel, and it shows her, just like in the day of Jeremiah, it shows her weeping for her children. It was a poetic way of lamenting. Just like saying, if Abraham's seed, you know, you kill Jews, you're Abraham's weeping. Same idea. But when Herod was dead, that would have been, there's a debate. Was that 4 BC or 1 BC? It was said by Josephus that there was an eclipse in March before Passover. Well, there happened to be one in 4 BC and 1 BC. I have chosen the 4 BC Passover date, but I realize it doesn't necessarily mean that it's correct. It's not important to me, but for the sake of lining things up, okay? It does fit better with the AD 26 date, which shows up in a number of different angles, so that's why I chose it. But a commentator said, a frightful inward burning consumed him, And the stench of his sickness was such that his attendants could not stay near him. So horrible was his condition that he even endeavored to end it by suicide. And he's the one that gathered all the leaders so that when he died, somebody would be crying. But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. So they probably fled to Egypt in May or June after the birth of the child. Okay? They stayed in Egypt around till the next March. And then would travel back again in April or May, whenever they got the message and got things together. Now, it seems that they may have thought, since this is the Messiah, seed of David, we ought to raise him in Bethlehem. It seems that they had thought possibly about relocating there. Joseph's family would have been more in that area maybe, okay? But then it says they heard that Archelaus, the son of Herod, reigned in that area, and so they were afraid, and so the angel said, you know, go on up to Galilee, Nazareth, verse 20, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's life. And he arose and took the young child and his mother and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in the Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither. Notwithstanding, being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the coast of Galilee. He probably went directly from Raphia to Gaza, directly up the coast to Nazareth in Galilee, and didn't go over east to Jerusalem, which he had maybe thought of doing previously. It says here, and came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophets, plural, he should be called a Nazarene. You can read commentary after commentary about where that is in the Old Testament and get all kinds of different speculations. There was something about the etymology of the word Nazareth and Nazarene that Matthew knew that people today have a hard time deciding on. Okay? Jesus was not a Nazarite. Okay? He drank wine. He touched dead bodies. He was not a Nazarite. The Nazarite vow was something that you had to take. There's no indication of that. So, that also means he didn't have long hair. Okay? You see pictures of Jesus with long hair. He did not have long hair. How do you know, Brother Mark? Because the Apostle Paul said, doesn't nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it's a shame to him? Okay, the common understanding among Jewish people was a man with long hair was a shame. The only legitimate reason a man would have long hair is if he was a Nazarite for a lengthy period of time. Oftentimes, the Nazarite vow was a short-term thing, and afterwards they would shave their head. So the hair was a time indicator. Paul did that. He shaved his head in Cenchrea, for he had a vow, okay? So a Nazarite for life would be someone who stood out, was different, because they had long hair. And it was unusual. It wasn't normal for a Jewish man. So we can easily infer from that Jesus had typical, what Jews called, short hair. And I don't know how short that was. Obviously, they didn't have the electric clippers and all that we have. But they could shave. They could shave their head. And the idea that the Jews never cut their hair or never trimmed their beards is also false. That's not a part of this. But go check out Mephibosheth. Mm-hmm. Mephibosheth decided, I'm not going to trim my nails or my beard so that David will know that I didn't just come to my decision because he happened to win the battle. I want him to know that I've had this decision from the very beginning. Therefore, I'm not going to trim my beard or cut my nails so I can prove it's a timestamp. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, anyways, throw that in for free. So the prophets, plural, what were they talking about? Isaiah says, who hath believed our report? To whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness that we shall see. And when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. No earthly attraction. He's not going to be a man of wealth and glory. Okay? He's despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Now, The etymology of the word Nazareth and Nazarene could refer to Nezer, which is a branch, the root of Jesse, the branch of Jesse, and so forth. They say, well, it could go back to the fact that he was called the branch. It could. But it says here in Matthew that he grew up in Nazareth and he would be called a Nazarene. It would indicate more that he was from a place of branches, not that he was called a branch or that he was a branch of the root of Jesse. So there's a lot of different speculations. Matthew knew something about the Hebrew that we have obviously lost. And therefore, because the Hebrew language is not a living language. Okay? If it weren't for the scriptures and the Septuagint and Arabic, there's a lot of Hebrew that we would not know. Because Hebrew and Arabic are close. And if you want to find a root, okay, the Hebrew that we have is largely the scriptures. And if you find a word, you say, what's the root to this word? What's the root word? And you don't have any other scriptures that tell you what the root word is, you can go to Arabic to find the root of that word oftentimes. Okay? So says Adam Clark, who's a Hebrew scholar. So there's something about this word Nazareth and Nazarene that we can't pin down. But I guarantee you Matthew understood it, and all those he wrote to understood it. So don't let it bother you. Don't let him say, well, this is incorrect. There's nobody alive today who has the authority or the intelligence or the knowledge to say this is incorrect. Okay? So don't be disillusioned by commentators who think they're more than a commentator. So, anyways, we're out of time, and we're out of chapter 2. The word Nazarene is used often. The early Christians were called the sect of the Nazarenes. Some people have thought that the word Nazarene or Nazareth had to do with someone who was of a lowly birth. Or it could be this. Remember what Nathanael said? Was it Nathanael? I think he said, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Okay, so being a Nazarene was not something you wanted to be called. So there could be, being that he said prophets, it could be the fact that he was despised and rejected of men, could be all that Matthew was referring to, he should be called a Nazarene, which was in their days someone of a poor town, or a town that the Jews looked down upon. And it could be no more than that, and it would still apply in Matthew's mind. We don't know, and therefore it would be wrong for us to get too dogmatic on that point. Let's stand together. Any questions or comments, something I missed or didn't cover? So it's very likely that they came to Bethlehem, had the baby Jesus, stayed there for 40 days, went up to the temple, offered their sacrifices in the temple, came back to Bethlehem, were there a short time, and right around that time the Magi shows up, finances their trip to Egypt, which they probably couldn't have done otherwise, because they only had, you know, the turtle doves and pigeon offering, which shows that they were very poor. Now their trip and their livelihood for the next year in Egypt has been financed, and that most likely is the chronological order of the events. Any thoughts? And just another thought, though this is not really, this is more, it's pertinent to our time of year. This is December 26th. What are some reasons why Jesus most likely was born in warmer weather? Because a newborn baby was wrapped in some rags and laid apart from its mother's body heat. Okay, all of us who know about newborn babies would most likely keep it cuddled in and wrapped up with the mother if the weather was not warm. What's another thing?
The shepherds were also in the field with their flock.
Shepherds abiding in the field with their flock. It was probably calving, or not kind of calving, lambing season. And that was probably late March, April 1st time, Passover. When the Lamb of God was born was probably when the lambs that they used for Passover were born, likely. What's another thing?
It's also doubtful. It's also doubtful that the king would have a taxing when it's everybody can't believe in their livestock and fires. You know, they can't just run off and take this kind of a trip
to travel maybe 90 or 100 miles from their hometown to pay a tax during the rainy, cold season, when from Nazareth you had to travel over terrain that sometimes was 3,000 feet above sea level. And so, yeah, likely they were going to tax the people in a time when it was much more easy to travel and not jeopardize the lives of their people to come and pay a tax. Yeah. All those things matter. Let's pray.